Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
I'm George. Truth and freedom sounds good.
I'm Dane, and I don't know what truth is either.
I'm Arthur, and it looks like hurt spelled backward to me.
I'm Michael, and truth is something I'm trying to wake up to.
I'm Chris, and truth, we could use a lot more of that in this world.
I'm Todd. You can't handle the truth.
I'm Raimi. A lot of people believe different versions of this the truth, and no one really knows which one is the truth.
I'm Marvin, and I'm something of an agnostic on the truth with a capital T.
My name is Howard, and truth is the undefinable absolute.
Nabu?
I don't know anything about truth.
My name is Rich. Beauty is true.
Truth is, my name is Chris.
I'm Peter, and my truth is a journey.
My name is John. I only know what's true for me. I have no idea what's true for anybody else.
I'm Larry.
My name is Sean. I'm not sure, but I don't know what's true.
I'm Jack.
My name is Paul. The truth is, I'm glad to be here again.
My name is Andrea. And the truth is, we have the truth.
My name is Larry, and nothing to say. My name is Jerry. Truth is, of course, not.
My name is Richard, and truth is something I struggle with a lot.
My name is Hart, and my battery ran out, and I'm not sure what we're doing.
My name is Bill. All I can think of is paraphrase Mark Twain, something about if you're honest, you don't have to remember so much.
I'm John, and truth is complicated.
My name's Ray. Each situation has its own truth. Peter, truth is a shifting concept.
I'm Michael, and I've had a lot of time to think about it as we've gone around the room. I personally would like to think that there are some universal truths, although I'm not quite sure exactly what those might be, but in general, I think truth is a very personal thing. We all have the obligation to find our own truth. At the same time, we have a society, so I think hypocrisy would be enough to put the
I'm Daniel, and the truth is, all I thought about was breakfast for 30 minutes.
I'm Lee, and I believe truth is depends on who you ask.
I'm Norman, and the truth sounds good to me.
My name's Dirk.
My name's Jim, and I think truth is
very big!
my name is Mark, and truth is in the eyes of the world.
My name is Paul. I didn't really hear the question. The truth is in selflessness and just being like your consciousness.
David?
My name is David, and I think for me, truth is more a question than an answer.
Who would you guess like to participate?
Truth is both right here and a mystery.
And your name?
Kent.
I'm Ben. Truth is contextual.
My name's Eve, and the only truth that I know is what I'm experiencing in the present moment now, in my body, in my mind, in my heart.
Thank you all very much. So I'd like to introduce today's guest, who is Eve Decker. We have a little blurb. Eve Decker began Vipassana meditation in 1990. She's recorded and toured since 1993 for the original folk trio Rebecca Riot, and we have their email address in the newsletter if you want. In 2006, Eve released a solo CD based on Buddhist teachings titled Commentary on Perfections of the Heart. And I believe there are samples out there on the table. Since that time, she has performed for numerous occasions at Spirit Rock, Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, James Barras' Berkeley Sangha and Joy Class, and the Berkeley Women's Sangha, and with Bread and Roses. Eve is joined today by her friend Kent Welsh and her brother Ben Decker, and they will sing original Dharma-inspired songs for us. So please welcome our guest performers.
Well, it's really an honor and a joy to be invited to share this music with you today. I just bow thanks, and bow thanks to my friend Baruch Golden, who's not here today, but who I met in 1990. I was the music director for a gay and lesbian family camp called Camp It Up. He came with his young daughter, who's now grown up, and we hit it off. And now Baruch and I are both in a program at Spirit Rock together called The Path of Engagement. And so Baruch connected me up with Jim, and I'm very, very pleased to be here and to bring my buddies, Ben and Kent. Ben and I grew up in a musical family, and music is just something that we do. And same with Kent. Kent and I met in a musical context in Berkeley in 1980. And then Dharma is something that has saved my life. And so it's so wonderful for me that they've come together in this way. But the music is just part of my karma, part of our karma. So I think of a poem, a short poem, by a Japanese poet, I can't remember who, maybe one of you knows. And it says, "The man digging turnips pointed the way with a turnip." And that's just what's happening here right now, is that we are musicians, Dharma practitioners, and we're just sharing what we know of Dharma in this way that comes naturally to us. So in 2003, I went on a 3-month silent retreat and heard the teachings on the paramis. In other Buddhist traditions, they're called paramitas, and they're the qualities that lead to enlightenment, or that the Buddha practiced, so they say, over many lifetimes to become a Buddha, but also for us in our lifetime, there are qualities that we can practice for a more contented heart. And there are 10 of them. And so I came home from that retreat and co-wrote 10 songs on these 10 qualities, and that's what the CD is, that's for sale, Commentary on Perfections of the Heart. The first parami, and the Buddha put this one first on purpose, is generosity. And he taught that none of the other qualities can be developed at all if we don't at first have some kind of a generous cultivate some kind of a generous spirit or a generous practice. I've heard some people teach that try some period of time, a day, a week, a month, where I act on every generous thought or impulse I have. Well, that can be challenging, because the mind likes to play with that and say, oh, well, you know, let's, you know, give my brother $800. You know, but after a while working with that practice, I've learned, and I'm sure many of you have too, that that it's true, that teaching is true, about the more giving that happens, the more life gives back. So this first song is called Generosity.
One, two.
Trust in the power of generosity, and give her a show I can't afford. While she's gone, I'm the one that stays warm, thinking about that shawl over her shoulders. I trust in the power of generosity, and give him a $20 bill. Thinking we're going to call ourselves Bodhi Day. And then another trio, and I was on tour in the East Coast, and in a van by myself. I dropped off my friends and was in a van by myself and got lost. Was traveling from New York to Boston, somewhere outside Boston, and got lost and drove through many states, because there's little states there, little. We tried to finish a lot of them. But I remained calm because I had two Thich Nhat Hanh cassette tapes. And I just kept listening to them. His voice is so calming, let alone the words, the meaning of what he's saying, just this, the tone of his voice. But that particular teaching was a lot about greed, hatred, and delusion, but also the positive qualities, love and compassion, awakening, equanimity, as seeds in the mind that we all have, and the ones that we water are the ones that grow. So after hearing him talk for that period of time, I wrote this song. It's called Gardener. It's really hard not to go where my whims urge me to go. But I know what sort of person I'm longing to become. If I want to help anybody in the world before I die, if I want the suffering all around us to subside, I have got to be more conscious of the things I do and don't do. Every little seed in time will flower. So
rooted.
So the first parami or paramita is generosity, and then the second one is differently called virtue, ethical conduct, morality. And Buddhism, those are the five precepts for us lay people. That's kill, not to lie, not to steal, not to hurt anyone with my sexual energy, and not to misuse intoxicants. And I've heard it taught, I think this is direct from Buddha, so I heard a teacher share it, I think this is something the Buddha said, that trying to have a spiritual practice without doing those ethical precepts is like trying to row off down the river in a boat while it's still tied to the dock. And part of that is, and I know this from my own practice, that my mind will not be still. My mind and heart are in uproar if I've been breaking those ethical precepts. And stillness is something that helps, you know, the settling of the pond and insight. Insight can't be born if my mind and heart are in chaos and conflict. So the ethical precepts calm it all down. So this song is called Virtue. everybody doing? Would you like to stretch?
No.
Are you
no.
Fine?
No.
Yes?
No.
Well, of course, take a stretch anytime you really want. Faith is one of those words that is often associated with the Judeo-Christian deal. One thing that I really appreciate about Buddhism is that the Buddha did not ask his followers to follow any dogma, anything. No, blind faith is not required in Buddhism. However, faith, it does have a role, faith in our own experience. So he made some suggestions, and he said, try it and see for yourself. And one of the things that I see a lot of, we all do, is impermanence. Things keep changing. I love that. I think it just, life is such a dream. You know, here we are all sitting here together, and it's as though we're just going to blink our eyes, and we're all going to be in our next thing, whatever that is. And we'll blink our eyes again, and then the next thing that happens, you know. And it happens even, it's just constantly happening, impermanence. And impermanence has a sad quality to it because the pleasant things end. But impermanence has the great relief that the unpleasant things end. So this song is called Faith. It's sort of a faith that the unpleasant things will end. The sky is gray against the landscape of your heart's been that way for far too long. You toss and turn, waiting for a shift to come. You wonder where you're going wrong. You call your friend. Keep on wondering, although we try, we can't predict the journey of the soul. You gotta let it go and take it on faith. Take it on faith. I Right, we have a couple more for you. This next one is renunciation. Oh, I wanted to mention that in my practice, in my meditation practice and my service practice, I'm mentored by three Vipassana teachers who are all coming here in soon. Gil Fronsdal, Donald Rothberg, and James Barras are all mentors, my mentors, my three mentors. And Gil, I was recently sitting with Gil and he gave a talk on renunciation. And he said that he's heard rumors among the Vipassana teachers that talks on renunciation are not popular with Western Dharma practitioners. We don't like to hear about that. but what Gil teaches, and in my experience too, is that renunciation isn't so much about going austere. It's more about putting something down to pick something else up. So for instance, I might watch less television so that I can meditate for an extra half hour in the evening. And the value of that to my life is gigantic, but it still takes effort.
Using my time and energy.
One more song for you. This is the last song on the CD about the paramis that we made, Commentary on Perfections of the Heart. And it's the last parami that the Buddha taught, and it's equanimity. And I think maybe it's the last one that he taught because it's the hardest one. It's the hardest one, maybe, in my experience, to get completely. There are ways to have awareness even when there's fluttering and emotion, an awareness, and in that awareness itself there's equanimity. But full-on body, mind, heart equanimity, I think that's what the Buddha meant.
Feel my heart respond without getting started.
Blessings everywhere. Be free of suffering.
I'd like to start. Is it all your own compositions, or do you compose jointly, or how do you get all those songs?
Some of them I wrote myself. Most of them are co-written. Kent and Ben and I write together, and we also have a circle of other friends that we write with. Yes.
Are any of your tunes inspired by traditional Indian or music, or music from the East?
Not intentionally. We are mostly, I know my background is mostly actually British Isles music. Our mother raised us with old English ballads, Joan Baez and Pete Seeger and the Beatles, and old English ballads. Right, Ben?
Yeah.
And maybe Kent has a little more influence, and maybe also with that instrument, the harmonium, you're hearing some of that Indian music too, because that's an Indian instrument. Kent, do you have more to say about that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, some of the Indian tradition in the Hindu, where Buddhism came from in India, has a fairly rich musical relationship with music. And maybe not so much, well, we don't find so much of Buddhist, but is it Buddhist music? We have some chants of things, but what? So, but yes, I'm exploring that possibility of making that connection, but still finding something that resonates. So, but yeah, I play around with ideas and this or that, and maybe working in some of the Indian flavor, and which has a little bit more devotional flavor. So how to both temper that with what's appropriate for Buddhism as well to bring some of that spirit in. So we'll see. This is all sort of a new experiment at this point in time.
Yeah, something that troubled me at first with the music is that when one goes to sit a long retreat, you can take the 8 precepts, which is the 5 precepts that we talked about before, but also in addition, something like don't sleep on high beds or sit in fancy chairs, right? Another one is don't wear perfume or jewelry. And then the last one is no entertainments, no music. And so I found that a little troubling, like, oh, I guess music is distracting from that deep concentration. But then Gil Frontfeld told me just recently that the very first Buddhist carvings, right around from the time of the Buddha, show people playing music and dancing. Buddhist. You know, obviously it comes from India. So maybe we can create that here.
Do you ever do vocalizations without words? In Hebrew, for example, there's a tradition of nigunim, which are soundings.
Yeah.
Without words. So yes. I'm just curious whether that ever.
We don't. Although Kent and I both were in college, we both sang jazz, and Kent directed a jazz choir, and I was in it. But no, we don't. But there's another entertainer around the local named Jennifer Barrison. And she does that, and I'm hoping to study with her. And you could bring her here if you were interested in doing that as a sangha. I can get you in touch with her. She's really experienced in that. Sacred soundings, yeah. Mm-hmm.
As musicians with a Buddhist awareness, I'm interested in comments any of you might make on that point where when you're playing, the performer falls away or self-consciousness falls away. How often does it happen? Do you play better during those periods of time? Is there anything you can do to encourage those, to work at it, or does that really just come when it comes? Or any comment on that phenomenon?
That does happen to me sometimes, and I always play better when that happens, and I feel way more connected to everybody. I feel the interconnection much more strongly when that happens. And I like it so much, I'm attached to it. which is a challenge. you know, I don't know really though. I mean, I can create the conditions. I can feel, I can encourage metta. I can feel loving kindness in my heart. And that's certainly a condition. I can feel the intention. But when that moment happens, it's not under my control. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't.
I'm wondering, maybe it happens in not the lead performer, but more likely to happen in an accompanist or someone for whom the idea of, you know, being spotlighted and so forth is not so much of an issue.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's always attracted me to performing music is that my entire life is that it's something that causes me to be in the moment and really present, which, as I'm learning recently, is a big thing for in Buddhism and meditation. So I see a corollary there in performance to some of the spiritual practices of Buddhism as I'm learning. So part of that is just for me is inherent. It's just being in the moment and simply, you know, being, having this musical experience and losing self-consciousness. Although it's most of the time it is a little bit of a struggle. So you, wondering, you know, am I going to play the right note? What are people thinking of me right now? Am I wearing the right shirt? You know, like.
Well, well, I mean, I think there, as I grew up, somehow I found music from a young age to be something that, where that type of experience, I didn't know how to name it, I didn't understand it, but there was something in the drawing that there was some sort of large space or some sort of way that I felt I was understood and I understood in a way that I didn't find just in, you know, I found a little bit, but there was some way that music transported or brought me to that place like no other place. And I was very involved in music for a long time, and then I got involved in Dharma because I recognized there were some limitations for how far I could go with that, or at least in music in general, and trying to be, let's say, on the commercial or, you know, make it a profession or something. So I got very involved in Dharma and very involved in and I got very involved in cultivating. And at a certain point, I recognized that really there's really something extremely fundamental similar about the musical experience, about that musical thing, and about the practice of Buddhism and what it's trying to cultivate, and that there's a very similarity in what they are trying to cultivate. That being said, then putting it in the context of combining the two when you perform, obviously there are some times, and or certainly when you're composing, or where there is it is a big thing about cultivating that space and finding. And finding what is it that allows that space to arise, and what hinders that. And it is a challenge, as Ben said, when you perform. There's so many other things that really it is a challenge. And there's also the you know, you've talked about in the old tradition. There's this, you know, not doing music, and there may be some reasons. But finding a way, I think there's a belief within this, or an interest, is that we're here in Western culture, you know, and there is one person terms it is that the passion of the West, that there we have a Western style of a very passionate way, and I think music fits very much into that. So I think our spirituality needs to have that expression of passion, somehow that interrelation. So I think that's the I think it's something that we all look for when we perform, when we in finding ways to do that. Anyway, I can't quite answer it exactly, but.
Given that, you know, the poverty stricken aspect of our pop culture in terms of Buddhist insight, are there any naturally occurring sort of Buddhist hymns that you have discovered just in American culture?
There are all sorts of covers. Actually, James Barres, when he comes to speak, you could ask him to bring his guitar. He'll pull out James, who's a very Taylor. Famous, thank Taylor. You, James Taylor, or a Beatles song that is totally Dharma. Mm-hmm. when you put it in this context. Yeah, and we have a few too that sometimes we'll do campfire sing arounds, you know. Yes, and I think it's great to cultivate those too. The ones we already know, but when we put them, or many of us already know, and when we put them in a Dharma perspective, we can sing with extra gusto because we're hearing that other meaning. Yeah.
That's about all the time we have. But I'd like to thank our guests again.
Thank you very much for having us.
Can you stay around a little bit afterwards? We can talk to you about this as well.
Okay.
Do we have any Sangha-related announcements today? Let me start. Do we have a host? We have a host. Mark is the host. Tell us.
Yes, I'm the host. And there will be tea and crumpets afterwards. I'll take a moment to prepare the crumpets. But. And just clean up your teacup after you're finished with warm water and soap on the back. There will be a Dana bowl that will be available. Suggested donation, if you're so inclined, is $5 to $8. Several of us meet around 12:30 to go out for lunch together. If you all care to do that, you're welcome to do that. And I think that's it.
For anyone who's new, we have a sign up sheet also outside by the Dana bowl. It's pink, and Todd will take your name off the list if you put it on there, and make sure you get on our mailing list if that's something you like. And we also have some copies of the directory, which Ray can tell you more about.
I also have another announcement. There's a small gay men's silent retreat happening, meditation retreat in Occidental, October 12th weekend. It's the same weekend as the GDF retreat, but there's only about 12 or 13 people that go on this, and there's room for some more people. If anyone's interested, you can see me or Peter or Jim about the details of that.
Do we have any announcements about the GDF retreat?
Yes, I'm Michael, and I'm the coordinator of the retreat this year. It's happening that same weekend, the 12th through the 14th, at Vajrapani Institute in Boulder Creek. And last week I got a big pile of registration forms, which I neglected to take with me. I was hoping they would still be here, but I don't see them. But the registration form is available on the GBF website, which is gayvegas.org, and if you click on the retreats button on the left, you'll get to this PDF file.
Do you have any flyers for that?
What's that?
Do you have any flyers or posters?
I had them last week and I thought they would be here, but I don't today, unless I find them. So.
Next week, Bill Childs and Daniel Rosnick, they're here. Handsome, substantial, amusing, wonderful men are going to be speaking in the Dharma Duo series, so you won't want to miss it.
Peter, I wanted to thank Johnny for asking for people to remember me. I have a bone infection in my foot. It's pretty serious stuff, and a 6-week course of treatment didn't kick it. So I'm sort of in limbo and pretty frightened about the whole thing. So. You should keep my mental and physical health in your prayers.
Any other announcements?
Peter, just to remind folks that the way that we get such wonderful speakers and presentations in the Sangha is via the program committee. I chaired that committee, and members of the committee are here. If you can raise your hand, and Jimmy, a few others. We solicit resources from the Sangha. So if you've had experiences with wonderful Dharma teachers that you think will make a valuable contribution to the life of the Sangha, talk to one of us, and we will work to put them on our list of speakers. We're just delighted to have you here today.
Any other announcements? Jordan?
Yes, a reminder that our talks are available on the internet at the GBF website, gaybuddhist.org.
Anyone else?
Eve, you have some CDs for sale.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then we'll close. You should do a dedication of marriage again. Would you like to read it for us?
Oh, sure. By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness, which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity, without too much attachment or too much aversion, and live believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.